Well, this is the fifth in our series of ministry messages entitled, It's a Miracle. We've been taking a fresh look at the miracles of Jesus because so often they're only really been used as illustrations in gospel preaching. And because of the audience on those occasions, there are things about the miracles we don't really go into. So we're taking that opportunity to do so in ministry these Lord's Day mornings. Remember, a miracle is an extraordinary event that can't be explained by natural or scientific laws, and it's therefore attributed to a divine agency. And in the case of the miracles of Jesus, him as God the Son. So far, our studies have included the sign miracle of turning water into wine at Cana of Galilee, the healing of the nobleman's son and centurion's servant, and the three people Jesus raised from the dead, Jairus' daughter, Lazarus, and the widow of Nain's son. Last week, our study centered on the casting out of demons at Gadara, although we were careful to note that whilst that was a Gentile region, and that happened there were many, many more instances when demons had to be cast out in Jewish society. So that's what we were looking at up until now. And today we're going to look at a single episode, but it contains three miracles. Single episode and it contains three miracles. Should I throw that out and see any ideas? No takers, right. Well, it's when Jesus walked on water, and then Peter walked on water, and then the storm was stilled. So all of that happened on the one occasion, and there were three miracles, one after the other. They're recorded by three of the gospel writers: Matthew, who was an eyewitness, then Mark, of course, who was gathering information after the event, and then John, who was also an eyewitness. Matthew's is the only one of the accounts that mentions Peter's zealous actions. But although that's the case, we're actually going to read from Mark's account this morning. And that's Mark chapter 6. And we'll read from verse 44, because that will give us a connection here. Mark chapter 6 from verse 44. And they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 men. So you know what that story has been, and that's the end of that. That's another miracle. We might look at that separately. Verse 45. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go to the other side before unto Bethsaida, while he sent away the people. And when he had sent them away, he departed into a mountain to pray. When evening was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. And he saw them toiling or struggling and rowing, for the wind was contrary to them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he cometh unto them walking upon the sea, and would have passed them by. But when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it or he had been a spirit, and cried out. They all saw him and were troubled. And immediately he talked with them and said to them, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased. And they were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure and wondered. They considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. And when they had passed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret, and drew to the shore. So what has just happened here when we put all the accounts together? Well, first, and it's very important, Jesus constrained his disciples to get into the boat and to launch out into the Lake of Galilee. And both Matthew and Mark record that. All three records that we've mentioned say that Jesus' instruction was for them to go to the opposite side from where they were. They were on the eastern shoreline. Matthew and Mark tell us that Jesus dismissed the crowd who had just been witnesses to the miracle of the lunch being multiplied to be able to feed 5,000. But as soon as he does that, he himself alone goes up a hillside to pray. Then a sudden storm hits Galilee, and that's recorded, of course, by all three writers. But it's Mark who mentions that Jesus saw the disciples struggling. Matthew and Mark place the moment when Jesus decides to go and run to their help as the fourth watch of the night, which is a Roman time of dividing, a Roman method of dividing time between 3 o'clock and 6 in the morning. Of course, all three writers describe Jesus' method of getting to the boat, and that was that he walked on the water. And they describe how the disciples were afraid. And it's Matthew and Mark who add the little detail. They thought he was a ghost or an apparition. Jesus speaks to his terrified disciples before he does anything else for them. And as I mentioned earlier, it's only Matthew who goes on to insert the bit about Peter, the second miracle at that point. And then the story ends with all three saying that the storm was calmed as soon as Jesus came into the vessel. So it's interesting to notice, before we say anything else, that the miracles on Galilee that night weren't performed in front of a vast audience. The Jewish hierarchy weren't there. The general public weren't there. But John does mention how some of the crowd who had been miraculously fed by the boys' lunch during the feeding of the 5,000, the next morning they went looking for Jesus. And after putting two and two together, they couldn't figure out how Jesus could have caught up with his disciples across the lake in the way that he did, because they had noticed that there only was one available boat and that the disciples had gone in that. And if we do the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, we'll go into that in a wee bit more detail. So here is a miracle that Jesus intended to be, or three miracles that Jesus intended to be for the benefit of his disciples, at least in the first instance, and not just to be done in front of a vast crowd of people. I wonder what they learned from that. I wonder, did they appreciate what had been done for them, just them? I wonder, are there things we can learn from what the Lord did for just them? Well, I think one of the things we can certainly learn from this is that difficulties are to be expected if we are truly followers of Jesus. And we can still expect difficulties even when we are being obedient and sensitive to the Lord's will. Because Jesus constrained Mark 6 and 45, his disciples, to get into the boat and go to the other side. Jesus said, go. And they went. There were no ifs, no buts, no maybes, no hesitation, no delay, it would seem, no excuses, even though it was evening. And remember that among these men were fishermen who were probably thinking, well, what's the sense of this? But then on the other hand, if they were experienced fishermen, they would have been able to navigate by the stars, and it still mightn't have seemed terribly unreasonable. Jesus says, go, we're going. And they most certainly would have been very familiar with the shoreline that they were headed towards. So in some ways, although Jesus was asking them to do something strange, it wasn't entirely outside of their comfort zone. He said, go, and they went. But in a flash, they're out of their comfort zone. They've made their way, and at some point across the lake, a violent storm occurs. I'm told such storms as these aren't uncommon in Galilee. I haven't had that experience in the couple of times I've had the privilege of preaching from a boat on the lake. But I've met people, and they did have the experience, and very suddenly a storm can be whipped up So it does happen, and it certainly happened this night. Now, prior to this, no storm warnings had been issued that they had foolishly failed to heed. There was no ancient method of reading the skies that would have said to them, whatever you do, don't head out tonight. They really had done nothing wrong. They'd actually done everything right. Jesus said, go, and they went. Nobody could have been blamed for this emergency. It just happened. A storm. And what can we say about it? But it brought a sudden change. Storms do. For them, it brought unwanted stress. Immediately, they were from a calm situation to a stressful situation. They were taken in almost an instant from something that was straightforward to being in trouble. That's what storms do. Each of those disciples could have asked the famous question, what have I done to deserve this? Why me? And often when we say, why me, we're not really asking the question, why me? What we're doing is we're kind of throwing out a challenge. We have to be careful how we use the why me's as believers. Because we're kind of making a statement. We're kind of saying, this shouldn't have happened to me. Well, it happened to these men who at that moment were just doing what Jesus asked them to do. They were being obedient. They were being faithful. They would love to have spent the evening with him. But he said, go, and they did. Now, there are times when storms come into our lives because we have been disobedient. And we have an illustration of this, of course, in the life of Jonah. Jonah was going in the opposite direction from where God wanted him to go. He was going to do the very opposite of what God asked him to do. And the Lord did send a storm to stop him in his tracks. So it can be that that's the case. But we should be able to know that. We should know if we're living in a way that's not pleasing the Lord and the Lord sends a storm. We should be able to put two and two together and say, right, Lord, you're speaking to me here. You're trying to get my attention. But it's not always the case, and here we have a case in point, where they're obeying. And equally, a lot of folk struggle with that, especially folk in the Lord's work. Oh, I don't deserve this. It's as if these things shouldn't happen to us, but they do. We live in a fallen world, not a fair world, and things like this happen. There were never any guarantees given by Jesus to his followers that life would be easy. In fact, he says, take up your cross daily. The most uncomfortable thing you can imagine is a cross. And follow me. Deny yourself. It's interesting that Peter, who features greatly in this story, Peter goes on to write this in 1 Peter 4:12. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. Think it not strange. And yet we do, don't we? And I think it hits us all the more when we feel that we are in the centre of God's will and then, bang, storm. Well, what was it like for the disciples? Beginning of verse 48, Mark 6. The wind was contrary to them. And that just means it was opposing them. Have you ever felt that everything was against you? The path ahead should have been plain sailing, but suddenly, that's no longer the case. And very quickly they're out of their depth. Does that sound familiar to anyone? How would you react? Or how have you reacted, perhaps, in the past as this has come your way? Well, how did the disciples react? Well, again, Mark 6:48. And Jesus saw this. They started to row for all they were worth. Now, normally the disciples would have known what to do. Well, even in storm conditions, they would have known maybe what not to do. Known sort of, right, don't do that because that's the worst thing you could do. But there's only so much in a violent storm that a person can do, no matter how experienced they are. And even people in lifeboat crews today, no matter how highly trained they are, there are still many folks who do that amazing job who lose their lives in trying to save others. There's only so much you can do. But as this storm got worse, it seemed to be getting the better of them. It was contrary to them. And as they seemed to row all the harder, they were being beaten backwards. You ever felt like that? When the conditions were normal, of course, they mightn't have had any rowing to do, just set their sail and away they go. But this isn't normal. And we would just love for life to be normal. We'd just love for life to just go on. And nothing to happen out of the ordinary or to take us by surprise or rob us of that sense of control that we all like. But life is not like that. And your Bible's an honest book. And here's a story which shows us just exactly that. They put their backs into it, yes. But they realize that their efforts aren't making one bit of difference. Before long, they're struggling to keep control of the vessel. And it's no longer of a case of, well, let's try and row out of the worst of this, out of the eye of this, and try and at least head in the direction that we should be going to, or anywhere that's safe. It's no longer a case of that. They were just simply now trying to keep the vessel from being overturned or from being flooded to the point of sinking. Things were desperate. They did what probably most of us do as soon as a storm hits us, figuratively speaking. And that is we try to fix it with our own efforts. That's the first thing we do, isn't it? But sometimes the Lord has to let us run out of our own steam to teach us that we can't fix everything. If you're here today and you think you can fix everything, news for you. It's not what the Bible says. Sometimes we think they can be fixed by us or by our friends or by going to people who have been in the same boat as us. But there comes a time when, no matter what we have done, who we have gone to, we realize this is beyond us. There were experienced oarsmen on this boat, experienced navigators. But now they've gone to the edge of their ability. If the storm had ceased while they had enough energy to keep rowing, they would just have done that and they would have credited themselves. Boy, that was a close shave. But we got there in the end. We made it. But Jesus, in his wisdom, allows them to reach the end of their own resources. Jesus did say in John 15:5, without me, you can do nothing. Annie Johnson Flint wrote this lovely hymn. He giveth more grace when the burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength when the labours increase. To added affliction he added his mercy, to multiplied trials his multiplied peace. But here's the verse. When we have exhausted our store of endurance, when our strength is failed ere the day is half done, when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, and this is the bit, our Father's full giving has only begun. And then the chorus says, His love has no limit, His grace has no measure, His power has no boundary, known unto men. For out of His infinite riches in Jesus, He giveth and giveth and giveth again. When we've reached the end of our hoarded resources, it's not the end. The Lord has allowed us to go down that route to show us that He wants to step in and is willing to step in. Now let's look a wee bit more at the story, and maybe let's shift our focus from all the action that's happening here in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the lake. And let's look up a wee bit higher. Because remember, Matthew and Mark were careful to say that Jesus didn't just go alone to pray. He went up a mountain. He went into a hillside to pray. Not a valley, not a plain, but an elevated position. And from that position, he was obviously able to observe what was going on. And we know that he saw, again, Mark 6 and 48, Jesus saw them struggling. He sees when we struggle. And he's watching us from an elevated position. The one who came, the one who died, the one who rose again from the dead, has ascended. He's at the Father's right hand. The place of power and authority. And it's from there that he observes you when you struggle. But what's missing? Because Matthew and Mark are very, very careful to say that he saw, but there's no mention of him hearing their cry. And that's not because he couldn't hear, but they didn't cry to God immediately. Remember the story of Jonah. Jonah had the same problem. He didn't cry to God immediately either. In fact, during the whole of that storm and almost shipwreck, Jonah didn't pray even when the mariners encouraged him. Pray to your God. And eventually they prayed to the God of Israel, Jonah's God. Jonah gets swallowed by the great fish. He still doesn't pray for 3 days. And then he prays. I wonder what maybe God sometimes has to do to us to get us to pray. That might seem like a shocking thing to say, but perhaps it's a reality. They didn't cry to God immediately. They tried this and that first. But in spite of that, Jesus was watching and Jesus was caring. And Jesus makes a move towards them before they even cry. Isaiah 65 and 24 says this, It shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. See, Jesus is never without a plan. Hope you realize that. Because quite often I don't have many plans and ideas when things go wrong. Maybe you're the same. But the Lord's never without a plan. And whatever you're maybe going through, or whatever you maybe will have to go through, sometimes when these messages are preached, there's a group of folk who have been through something and it's in the past for them. There's a group who are going through something and it's very applicable. But it's maybe waiting for you. There's maybe something. There's maybe a storm that's about to break upon your life. And you'll think, what do I do here? You're without a plan. I didn't plan for this, you might say. Jeremiah 29:11, God says, I know the plans I have for you. The Lord's never without a plan. For us even. Not just a plan for what's going to happen in the panorama of prophecy, but it's a plan for you and me in the midst of all of this. And Jesus makes his way towards his struggling servants. When he comes within sight of them, in fact, in one of the narratives he passed by, the boatload of exhausted disciples don't recognize him. He comes to them, of course, in a very unusual way. He's walking on the waves. Not just walking on the water, as some pictures would have you think, as if it's just like a still pond. The storm hasn't been still yet. So I see him coming, charging through these boisterous, deadly, high, and damaging waves. But here's the thing. Jesus had power over that, even when it was at its height. But the storm had no power over him. Jesus has power over every situation. And there's no situation can have power over him unless he allows it, because we have to remember he allowed wicked hands to take him, arrest him and beat him. And he allowed the crucifixion. These are things that he allowed, but it's not that he was out of control. He knew that he had to go through that for your sake and mine, that we would be saved. Jesus has power over every situation. And he charges through those heaving waves. And as he does so, the disciples get a glimpse of him. Or at least they get a glimpse of something. They see him, all right, but they don't recognize him. There are a couple of occasions in the Word of God where they don't recognize Jesus. The two in the Emmaus Road don't recognize him. Mary Magdalene at the tomb doesn't recognize him. That's a whole other story. But they don't recognize him on this occasion, and yet there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to think that Jesus would have changed his appearance. Why would he? But he comes walking in the water, and that's different. And the disciples think that it's what we would say today, a ghost. In fact, we could put it this way, the disciples thought evil of good. They thought the worst of the best. In all of their confusion, they got it wrong. They thought that Jesus was still far away when Jesus was actually near. Can you imagine who would put those ideas in somebody's mind? You know, we go through things. Storms hit us. And the devil comes in and he loves to get at you when you're beaten. And whenever you're at your most vulnerable, he will encourage you to think the worst of the best. He'll encourage you to think evil of good. He'll encourage you to blame God. He'll encourage you to think that God doesn't care. He's not near. When actually, he's the one who's made the first move. Maybe you're here today and that's what you're thinking. Jesus doesn't care. Don't give in to the lies of the devil. This book is full of the love of God and the care of our wonderful shepherd Jesus. So they are afraid. They think it's a ghost. And Jesus speaks. Hasn't done anything yet. He's come to them walking on the water. They're still struggling. But he speaks. And you're maybe here and you've been praying and maybe you've been trying to get your head around a lot of things. Be open to what the Lord's saying, because the Lord does speak. He does speak. But sometimes when we go through things, we stop reading. And that's a channel through which the Lord speaks. We stop gathering together. That's a channel through which the Lord speaks. The Lord speaks. He will speak. Throughout my whole life, and it's, as you know, my testimony, it's had many ups and downs. But I can say this, the Lord has always spoken. Always. And Jesus speaks. And he says, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. Or literally, take courage. And this is the interesting bit. I am, be not afraid. Did you get that? Take courage. I am, be not afraid. This would be a good time then to think of what Matthew adds, which is Matthew 14. And from verse 27, he includes this detail. Jesus spake unto them, said, be of good cheer. I am, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. So let's say Peter recognizes that this person is using the I am title here. That's something that Jesus would have done. So Peter recognizes this. But he still needs some convincing. I wonder, is that what we're like too? God is speaking, but we maybe just don't like what we're hearing. Or maybe it's still not enough for us. Jesus is patient and goes along with Peter. Because Peter then says this very strange thing indeed. In the middle of this storm, remember, this is still raging. All of this is still going on. There's still this awful scene. There's still a step between them and death. And Peter says, Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water. So here's this boat full of fearful colleagues in the ministry, if you like. And Peter asks Jesus to confirm his identity by giving him also the power to walk over the waves. So even the first request from the disciples isn't to save us. It comes from Peter, and he says instead, show us. I think it would have been a wonderful thing if the whole bunch of them had said, yes, Lord, command us all to get out of the boat and walk towards you. We'll know who you are. What a testimony that would have been if they'd all got out. What a miracle that would have been. But to do that would have required them to abandon the vessel. All of the disciples but Peter felt safer in the sinking vessel than stepping out at Jesus' command. Peter asked the Lord for the power to do what the Lord was doing. And in the middle of this crisis, Jesus granted his request. Jesus said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on water, Matthew 14 and 29, to go to Jesus. Peter received power. For that brief moment, he was able to do as Jesus did. Remember a few years ago, the young people were wearing bracelets, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And Peter was saying, well, this is what Jesus can do. Let me do the same. So how are followers of Jesus to do what Jesus would do? Especially in times of great anxiety and stress. Well, we have it in the story here. Jesus will give the power. Jesus shows his disciples that he can empower them to do as he has done. Remember, Jesus would send his disciples out during his earthly ministry and said, I'm going to give you power to heal and to cast out demons. And you remember how they came back and they told about all the things that they were empowered to do. And not only that, Jesus talked about after the day of Pentecost and talked about how you will receive power after the Holy Ghost has come upon you. Jesus also said, greater things than these shall ye do. I wonder, have we forgotten that the Lord will give us power to do what he wants us to do? And if we are followers of him, surely we are looking to him. He is our example. And even in the midst of a storm, he can give us power to do what he did. But then something happened. Verse 30 of Matthew 14. When Peter saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. Now, here we do find a disobedience. Because they had gone out in the boat as Jesus told them to. Peter had asked the Lord if he would allow him to walk on water, and the Lord gave him the power to do that. But you remember before that, when Jesus spoke, he said these words, "Be not afraid. I am." Be not afraid. I am. Take courage. And Peter is only a short time experiencing what he had asked to experience, being empowered by Jesus so to do, and he sees the waves. To do that, he must have taken his eyes off Jesus. Because if he'd kept his eyes on the Lord, he wouldn't have seen what was happening all around him. Or it would at least have paled into insignificance. And as soon as he doubts, as soon as fear comes in, the power leaves. And he begins to sink. And now we have somebody crying, "Save me." It all began so well. But as Peter looked around him and looked down, it all came crashing in on him. Here's the wonderful thing. Jesus immediately stretched forth his hand and caught him. Do you know something? We get it wrong as believers. We are enthused one minute, and it doesn't take too long for something to happen and to rock the boat. And before you know it, we're in the doldrums. We're saying, "Well, I'll step back from this and from that." And before you, we're as cold where we once were on fire. And the wonderful thing is this: Jesus is still prepared to come and reach down his hand. I wonder, is Jesus reaching his hand down to somebody today who has taken their eyes off him? "O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" Are we doubters? Jesus caught him. Now there's no doubt as to who he is. His identity is confirmed. And the story ends with Jesus coming up into the boat. And there's a wee children's chorus that we used to sing in the Stone Age when I was at Sunday school. "With Christ in the vessel, we can smile at the storm." Now there was another occasion, of course, where he calmed the storm when he was in the vessel and he said, "Peace be still." But here, he just comes into the vessel. And it makes all the difference. What is God saying to us today? Well, he tells us from this story that storms come. Expect them. This story also tells us that the Lord is active before we even call out to him. That's amazing. It also tells me that Jesus is near when we don't think it. It also tells me that he's observing my struggles from an elevated position where he is at the right hand of the Father. It also tells me that he can empower me to do as he would do, even in the midst of the storm. And it also tells me that while I might falter in my faith and I might stumble and take my eyes off him, he's still prepared to reach down for me. Another thing this story tells me is this. I said Jesus had a plan. What was his plan? Right at the very beginning, "I want you to go to the other side." Do you know, after the storm was stilled, at least one account says they were immediately at land. Where? The place where Jesus wanted them to be. Three miracles in one event. We have an amazing Saviour.